Verbally Effective with Ina Esco is an interview-style podcast that intersects art, culture, politics, and entertainment with a Memphis focus. Each week, I'm joined by a featured guest with roots in Memphis. Verbally Effective delves into each guest's personal journey to uncover the incredible stories fueling their purpose, the highs and lows of their pursuits, and how through their passion, they are moving the culture forward. Greetings, greetings, and welcome to another edition of the Verbally Effective Podcast. I'm your host, your double E, Ina Esco. And, you know, this is the podcast that intersects art, culture, politics, entertainment with a Memphis focus. And I got one of my good friends in the building with me. I'm talking about we started in radio together a very long time ago. Yep. He is a mixed DJ, media consultant, A&R, all things media. I'm talking about my boy DJ 007. What's up?
Man, I'm good, good. Back in the M-Town, back, you know what I'm saying? Just glad to be here.
Look, when the last time you been in Memphis?
Probably about a year ago.
A year ago.
Probably a little less than a year ago. Maybe about 10 months ago. I want to get out here a little bit more often now, though.
Yes. The music scene is amazing here in Memphis.
I miss it.
You miss it?
I miss the energy. I miss the vibe. You know what I'm saying? We created a lot of great things out here musically. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And you have definitely contributed to the Memphis music scene.
And I think that I have to kind of tell my story, because I think one thing I've been very humble. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't really speak on a lot, and I just watch a lot of other people just get credit for doing things. So I just think sometimes, man, you gotta pop your shit.
Can I say?
I'm just making sure. All right. Yeah. Sometimes you gotta pop it, man. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, you're gonna get a chance to pop it today. I really wanna start the pod off with how DJ 007 and I know each other. We started broadcast radio at Hot 107.1 FM, Flynn Broadcasting, over 20 years ago.
Yep.
And when I say that was an experience.
Yes, most definitely an experience. Definitely an experience. Boy.
So what year did you start at Hot? And talk to us about your experience there.
I started off at the end of 2002, going into 2003. So I got here, I think, like in that November, if I'm not mistaken, like around that time. So, yeah, Hot 107 was definitely a interesting place. We definitely did the most with the least.
We did the most with the least.
So,
you know, Hot 107 is one of those media entities that caters to Memphis music. It's going to play local Memphis artists.
Yep.
And you're not going to get that on every radio station here in Memphis. So I think that was a huge plus, and they still do it.
Definitely. Like, Hot 107 is definitely essential to Memphis's culture. I will say that.
Yes, exactly. And other than Hot 107, we both matriculated our careers to Clear Channel Radio, which is now iHeartRadio. But we're going to get into all the radio transitions very soon. But we're going to get right into 007's journey. Where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Houston, Texas.
Yes, sir. Houston, Texas. H-Town, baby. Just a few miles away from my hometown, Beaumont, Texas. So we immediately connected with that Texas connect, right? Yep. So tell me about growing up in Houston, Texas.
Man, Houston is just a different type of vibe. You know what I'm saying? You grow up with so much culture, so many different races, so much interaction. You know what I'm saying? You don't even realize it. It's just a big melting pot. Houston is just a very diverse city. You know what I'm saying?
It is.
Musically, it's just in a space by itself. You know what I'm saying? Like, Houston definitely, for like the independent movement in hip hop, was a very essential space. Of course, you know, Houston definitely has created some legends, and we've got our own legendary sound and whatnot. I've always been close to the music scene. I started off in radio at a very, very early age.
And what age is that?
I started off in radio when I was 17 years old.
17.
Yep, I started off as an intern.
While you were in high school.
Yep.
How did you do that?
Crazy story. My best friend was trying to page me one day.
That's when we had pages.
Yeah. So he was trying to page me one day, and he was a number off. Just so happened the number that was off just so happened belonged to the biggest DJ in the city at the time. So me and his pager numbers were right there. So the DJ wound up calling my best friend back. They got to talking. So he told him to come down to the radio station because they were doing internships. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was already a DJ. You know, I've been DJing probably since I was 11.
11?
Yeah, 10, 11. I started off DJing when I was like in the
mixers
fifth,
and
fifth
everything.
Grade, fifth, sixth grade. You know, I mean, that's when I started really attempting. I'm going to say probably by the time I was like in the eighth, ninth grade is when I was a little bit more, you know what I'm saying? But I started like in sixth grade, fifth grade, somewhere like up in there. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And interned at 17 at, is it Hot? What was the station?
I interned at Magic 102.
Magic 102. Because I'm trying to think of the stations in Houston. It was Magic and what's it?
Magic and then 97.9
The Box. 97.9
The Box.
The Box.
I'm transferred to 97.9 probably by the time I was 19. So I was interning and starting my journey over there at Magic, and then 97.9 is the place where I actually got my opportunity to actually be on the radio mixing. And I was I started off working 3 a.m. to 4 a.m.
That's how we start.
Yeah.
We start those late night shifts.
Yep. So I started off there and, you know, just worked my way up and, you know.
The rest is history.
Yeah, the rest is history.
Wow. So let me ask you this. Who inspired you to even get into mixing and DJing at a very young age? Because you started very early.
Man, I used to just watch, I was just MTV. I'm trying to think, man. It was watching Run DMC, I would always watch the DJs. For some reason, I was just always enamored by the DJs, just watching them scratch and just that whole energy. And it was actually like a couple of DJs in my neighborhood too. So I don't know, for some reason, it's like when the bug hit me, it just took over. I never wanted to be anything else. I mean, I don't ever remember having anything else in life that I wanted to be. Like from the fourth, fifth grade, from that point forward, like I just made it my business. I said at some point in time, I'm going to be on the radio.
Okay.
And I'm going to be DJing.
I feel you. Now, what did your parents say about this dream of yours that you were doing?
Go get
when
a
you
job.
Were young. Go get a
go
job.
Go get a job. Go to college. Go do all of this. You know what I'm saying? They just thought it was a phase. And man, I would go through there. My dad had a bunch of records. Of course, I was tearing his records up. I was spending every penny I had on my little raggedy ass turntables, my Radio Shack mixer. Man, I think it's a difference between wanting something and being driven.
Yes.
Like, I was driven. Even to this day, I'm still kind of like in that same space. I'm just driven.
Yeah.
You know, except now it's not just with DJing. Now it's just more so just
the business,
the music
side.
Business. Yeah. The music business.
Because, you know, being in the media, being in radio, broadcast, you learn so much over the years, especially for people that have been in this business as long as we have.
Yep.
You know, things that we didn't know back then that we know now, we wish we knew back then.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Man, just the journey. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Just the things, even just the journey here. I mean, man, the people only knew the things and the obstacles that I had to go through, man. Like
the gatekeepers.
Oh, man.
Gatekeepers.
Man, let me tell you something. I got to be so transparent because now I can go back and I can kind of, you know, I mean, I don't know, man. I've always had this disconnect with gatekeepers and, you know, top of the food chain people. But the people love me. You know what I'm saying?
They do. And your talent is undeniable.
Yeah. And it's just, I just know I should have always been bigger. But at the end of the day, I just feel like I was the sacrificial lamb. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, definitely, like, out here in Memphis, like,
Memphis cutthroat now.
I put a lot of things together out here. People only knew, like, half the stories about these artists and them getting deals and the cosigns and all of the stuff that was needed. You know what I'm saying? Like all that, man. I'm telling you, it's a lot.
Into all of those things. But wait a minute. Let's back up a bit.
I'm about to be on my Cat Williams shit today.
Get on your Cat Williams. You know, so let's back up a bit, though, because we're still in Houston right now. Yeah. You starting at both radio stations and then you started mixing on 97.9.
Yep.
So tell me about the music that you were playing back then, because Houston has so many hot artists. You know, a lot of Chop and Screw is what I grew up on.
You know what? Let me tell you, and that's crazy that you mentioned that, because, you know, big shouts out to all my people that was working at the box back then. Man, we were a very innovative staff. We were one of the first to really push mix show culture. It was us at 97.9 The Box back in the early 90s, and then it was like the Bay Area KMEL. Like, we were like the two radio stations that kind of created mix show culture, and of course New York Hot 97 as well, and BLS or whatnot, but we were definitely like top four or five stations that created that culture. So I started off in radio with legendary DJs like DJ Steve Nice, Michael 5000 Watts, you know, that's a very, very close friend of mine. OG Ron C, you know, and people don't even realize OG Ron C is one of the biggest DJs out the South, but he started off as the van driver at the radio station. You know what
that's
I'm saying?
How it go.
Yeah, you, so you just never know, like, the people that you would meet in this journey. That's why it always, you know, makes sense to treat people the right way. But, man, we did a lot for the culture. You know, I was cool with DJ Screw. I used to always
DJ
see Screw. I met Screw like before the whole Screw
movement
became popular. I knew his cousin. His cousin was actually one of the guys that got him moving in the right direction DJ wise. And I used to watch his cousin Dunny DJ a lot. So I watched Screw's whole movement, and my cousin was actually like one of Screw's best friends. So he was the person with the camera all the time. So he kind of caught that whole Screw movement from about 92 to 2000. My cousin's got everything. So just to watch Houston culture grow. And one of the things that happened at the radio station was me and Michael Watts, were very, we moved forward with a lot of Houston music at a time when Houston music wasn't popular to the elite people in the city. You know what I'm saying? It was big in the streets, but we saw the movements coming. We saw Lil Kiki coming. We saw Fat Pat coming.
Yes.
We saw all of this energy. And the other DJs were basically focused on New York music, Atlanta music, and we're telling them, like, look, man, I'm telling y'all,
but
this is what's taking over
own.
The streets right now. So even in a situation like that, I was a sacrificial lamb. You know, they wound up making cuts. They let people go. And me, and at the time, Watts wound up getting back. But me, Watts, and a few more others, you know, were let go. And I was real, real young. You know what I'm saying? I didn't understand the politics. I just was passionate about what was going on. And I'm like, man, no, this is not what they own. They own this. They this is what y'all need. The Screw is going to be the next thing. And they used to just look at us like, man, ain't nobody going to listen to that shit outside of Houston. That shit ain't going nowhere. And I'm like,
man,
I'm
it was
y'all.
The culture
so
and music.
It. Yep. So.
Wow. So when they let you go, what happened for 007 next?
I probably went a little while without being on radio, maybe about a year and a half. And then I got the
you
opportunity.
Went a little while.
Probably like about a year and a half, and then I wound up going to Tyler, Texas.
Tyler, what's in Tyler? Isn't Tyler near Dallas?
Tyler is in between Shreveport and Dallas.
Okay, gotcha.
So I wound up going to East Texas. We started a radio station out there called The Blaze, because I just wanted to be on the radio. Mm-hmm. So I just left Houston. Like one day, my boy Ice, Luscious Ice, who actually became the program director at High 107. That's how I got the
Memphis. I remember Luscious.
Yeah, so Ice wound up getting a job in East Texas. He called me and asked me did I want to come, and I jumped up. I just came. I left everything in Houston, and I went to the radio station, and the radio station didn't even put me on payroll. Ice just gave me some mix shows. He said, hey, look, if you come down here, I'll let you mix at 5 o'clock, and you can mix at night. And I'm a thought, you know, you just like you figure it out. And I mean, I'm the type of person, I figure out how to make some money. I mm-hmm. mean, if you're gonna give me the mix shot, I'm gonna get out in the streets and we're gonna put something together. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right. And what people don't understand about radio is, like you're saying, you went to a very new station. A lot of times when you jump into radio, it's not things that you think you fit to make all this money. No, you about to put your work in, you yeah. about to network, yeah. make connections and leverage that yes, whole relationship.
That's absolutely right. Wow. And that's my whole journey. I don't know what it's like to get yeah. checks from radio. I don't yeah, know what it's like to be on.
It's very fickle. It's a very fickle business financially.
I've never been on salary. I've always been an hourly employee. I'm always the fly on the wall. That's me. I'm like when I was young, yeah. I'm just the fly on the wall. I'm just getting all these opportunities. I'm watching all these things happen. I'm meeting all these important people. Like I've literally met every artist that you can think of that I've ever wanted to meet. Mm-hmm. Like I've been around Biggie, Puff, Kim,
ooh,
Mary.
Puff. You've been around Puff.
Because Bad Boy was one of their hubs was Houston. Okay. So when
did he have any freak off parties in Houston you attended?
Oh no, no, no. Oh, no,
I
man.
Just wanted to know.
But man, let me tell you something though. But Houston, man, we did a lot early on. Like yeah. and just to meet all of these different people and go to all these different situations, man, just being able to move around a certain way. I got spoiled with just always getting in places free, always meeting all the biggest
right.
artists.
Right, there are a lot of perks.
Yeah, and then I'm DJing the biggest parties. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was extremely young. In every situation mm-hmm. in Houston, I was always the youngest person at yeah. the time. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm.
it's definitely about yeah. creating opportunities for yep. yourself in this business.
Yeah,
and that's what people don't know. They think, you know, they look at you, they look at who you're around, they think, you know, the events that you're associated with, and they think that you got all this money.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. maybe you work something out with somebody for you your know. Services, but it's a cold business.
Yeah,
now.
You got to go
dog
over there.
It out.
Yeah, you got to go over there and figure it out, bro. And
you got to figure it out.
The one thing about me, I've always had to just think outside the box.
Yes.
I've never been the person that people or tastemakers just give an opportunity. They'll help everybody, but when it comes to me, it's always going to be some type of excuse. So I'm used to just always having to start at the bottom. I wouldn't know what to do if somebody just gave me some money and told yeah. me, you know what I'm saying? So I'm the yeah. type of person, I eat what I kill.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
That's how
I eat what I kill.
Because it really puts a fire up under you and you really learn the business and the craft. Now, this is what I want to know. How did you end up in Memphis 007?
Man,
how did you get to the Bluff?
It's crazy because I was DJing and I was at the radio station in Tyler, and Ice wound up going to Philadelphia. After he left Tyler, he wound up going to Philadelphia to work. And I was thinking I was going to wind up going to Philadelphia. But then one day he called me and told me, they let him go. But while he was on his way back, driving, getting ready to drive back to Houston, one of the consultants that he worked with told him that they wanted him to interview for this radio station gig in Memphis at High 107.
Mm-hmm.
So he wound up getting the job at High 107. And what's crazy is that about 2 months before that, for some reason, Memphis just started popping up in my brain. I started getting like records from Memphis, mm-hmm. Kingpin, Skinny Pimp, and Kia Shine, TVs and Wang, and it was just all kind of energy about Memphis mm-hmm. that just kept coming to me. Like every week, it was something about Memphis,
and I didn't
know anybody in Memphis. I didn't know, you know, so I didn't know where it was coming from. And then when he called me and just asked me, like, "Man, I'm getting ready to go to Memphis, man. What's up? What you want to do?" And I'm like, I was getting good money in Tyler, man, but just, you know, living in a smaller city, I just needed to make a move. So I was either going to go to Dallas or I was going to go to Memphis. And I said, well, just whichever opportunity comes first, because I was kind of dealing with my boy Steve Nice, who had just got the K-104 in Dallas. So Steve was trying to get me the K-104, and Dallas was right up the street from Tyler. So I was going to be able to kind of, you know, go to Dallas, go to mm-hmm. Tyler, and I could create my situation. But when Ice called me with the Memphis situation, I just jumped at it. Mm-hmm. So,
and what were your immediate thoughts when you hit Memphis?
Man, I was just culture shock.
Culture shock. Many Man. People say that.
Yeah.
And why is that?
I wound up going to a restaurant to go get a barbecue sandwich, and they put coleslaw on it.
You
and
was that like, what is
I'm this? Like, I thought they messed my order up. I was hot. I was like, what the hell is this?
That's
like,
not
I
very Houston-like.
Yeah, it's not. So that was just some of the things and just some of the stuff that I was, like, your first couple of days somewhere. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was exciting, but it was just
different.
You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. But I definitely, like, grew to appreciate a lot of these things. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
like,
sir.
I love coleslaw now with my hot dogs and my barbecue.
Yeah, you can't have it other way.
I can't have it no other way now. You know what I'm saying?
So you were at Hot 107 when Cagle was there? Was Cagle still there?
No. I was there. Cagle had left. Okay. Boogaloo was the program
Boogaloo.
Director.
Yes.
Yep, Boogaloo.
What's up, DJ Boogaloo?
Superman. Yeah.
Was Devin there?
Nah, Devin had probably been gone about 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah, he had been gone about 6 months, maybe a year at that point in time.
Okay.
So, yep. So, yeah, we got
this
there.
02-ish.
Yeah, 02-ish, 03-ish.
Yeah. And so you had to learn. I know you said you received a lot of the Memphis artist records, but you definitely had to learn the culture. How did you acclimate to the music scene in Memphis when you first hit Hot 107?
Man, immediately I just started moving around, man. My second day in Memphis, or maybe my third day in Memphis, Kia Shine pulled up on me, introduced herself, and just dropped me off some money.
Mm.
Yeah, like I'm talking about, like, I think at the time it might have been about $400.
It's like, play my records.
Yeah, nah, money. It wasn't even, nah, just okay. Like, man, welcome to the city. Like, he didn't even ask about playing, like, you know, like, it was almost, and I'm talking about, like, I came to Memphis with my last $1,000, and my truck was just packed with my shit. So I just came here on a wing and a prayer.
Okay.
Because Hot 107 was paying me $7.50 an hour, and I could only work 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
So, and I was working in the promotions department, and they was giving me the mix shows at night.
Mm-hmm. So that sound about, like, right.
Yep. So I had to go in there and make something work. But yeah, Shine just pulled up on me just on some cool shit. I guess he was just like, man, I know you're just getting into town, man. I know you probably need some things. So just instantly, you know what I'm saying? So
showed you love.
It was, yeah, definitely, man. So
wow.
Shout out to Kia Shine. He definitely put me in some good spaces.
Who were some of the Memphis artists you immediately gravitated to put into your mix shows, or, you know, the ones that you really like, oh, Memphis, y'all got it going on.
Yo Gotti. Yo Gotti, definitely.
Yeah, immediately.
I was there at a very intricate point in Yo Gotti's career. Mm-hmm. This is during the time that we got here, during the time that they were recording Life, the Life album. And Kia Shine had Rap Hustlers. But at that point in time, the Rap Hustler situation was kind of in transition because Frost had went to jail and Shine was trying to hold everything down. So he, you know, doing everything he could to try to get this Life album done for TVT. And that was kind of like the breakout moment for Gotti. But Gotti was definitely, that was the energy that I was getting when I got into the city. And that's the thing with me. I just go wherever the energy is at. Mm-hmm. Like, if they telling me the hottest person is Yo Gotti, then that's what I'm looking for. But like Yo Gotti, I think at the time, like Mac E.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm trying to think. The biggest song when I came here was Sally Up, Ring Sally Down.
Yeah, I remember
old
that.
Old Miss Lucy. Headbusters.
Headbusters.
And it was Skinny Pimp and Gangsta Black.
Gangsta
Take It Over.
Black, GB. What's
yeah,
up?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So like that was, and then I think at that time that's what was that, whatever the energy was in the city, that was how I was gonna come, because I knew that would always be the thing to separate me from everybody. Like, I always tried to figure out what was the missing thing in the city, and that's how I attacked it. So what I did, first and foremost, they kind of stood out. I was doing Chopped and Screwed mixes because I said,
I said,
man,
you were the only one I could listen to that took me home.
Yeah, so me coming from Houston and me, you know, having a relationship that I had with Michael Watts and you know, the Screwed Up Click and whatnot, I just said, man, you know what, it'd be dope if I just did my own version of it out here in Memphis. So they let me do it on the radio. I did it for a couple of months. And then I started getting real heavy into the mixtape scene because nobody was really doing mixtapes. So I just found the things that people weren't doing. And with the mixtape hustle, I was hand to hand out here. Like, that's how I ate. Like, literally, I had to know every week I got to make $1,000 and $5 a pop. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I'm putting them in the stores, consignment. I'm going to the club after premiere. I'm in the parking lot. Hey, man, check this out. This is this. And I'm doing this not just in the city, but all of the smaller surrounding cities as well.
That's
so
how
I would
you do
be
it.
I would be in Mississippi, I'd be in Arkansas.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just my whole thing. Everything I've ever done, I've always had to do it the hard way. Like
you were
everything.
Growing
like
your brand.
Yep. That was what I was doing. But at the time it just was, man, I was trying to eat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so. And that's how I go. Now, 007, you used to have a show called Independent.
Indie Day Radio. Yep, Indie Day Radio.
On 97.
Yep, and that show was on for 15 years.
Yes,
yeah, 15 years.
I remember.
Man, we broke everything. Everything that came about the city, let's just say from 05, 06 to 2020.
I remember.
Almost 2021.
Indie Day
Radio. I mean, everything came through me. You know what I'm saying?
I remember. Look, we're going to get into Indie Day Radio and everything that 007 has popping off today out there in Houston. We're going to take a quick break. It's the Verbally Effective Podcast with your double E, Ina Esco, and DJ 007. Hey, we're back on the Verbally Effective Podcast. Hey, it's Ina Esco, your host, and I'm sitting here with my good friend, DJ 007, DJ, media consultant, and we're jumping right back into the convo. We were talking about Indie Day Radio. First off, you were at Hot 107. Yep. How did you transition to Clear Channel at the time?
Man, you know what's crazy? I wanted to make that move, like, I had just kind of reached my breaking point at Hot 107 where a lot of things just weren't really moving as progressively as I wanted them to. So I kind of started building a bridge. And actually, that's when me and Mike T started getting cool. So Mike T, because I had already kind of been rocking with Devin and Nate, that's who I was rocking with.
Not Nate Boogie, but the program director, Nate, at the time.
So me and Nate, I used to always see Nate out and about. So, you know, me and Nate got to be cool. And then with that situation, Nate kind of got me over to Devin. And then at the same time, I was formulating a relationship with Mike T. So really just kind of all three of those things kind of came together. Nate wound up leaving, the old guard wound up leaving, like Nate left, Bruce wound up leaving, and Bruce was like the operations manager at the time. So when they were making that transition, I kind of found a way to get in there. I was actually going to go to either K97 or at the time it was Power 99. And Power 99, my old consultant, which my old program director from Houston, was actually the consultant for Power 99. So I was waiting on him to give me a call back. And just so happened, Devin Steele called me back and offered me a part-time job. So I was either going to take a full-time job at Power 99 or a part-time job at K97. So I was kind of thinking to myself, I was like,
which one?
I know I could go get this, get more money at Power 99, but I'm like, K97 ain't never going nowhere. Power 99 was a new radio station.
That's why
so.
I said you did right.
Yeah, I left
K97 and went to Power 99.
They offered
me a ladies' night show on Friday, and it was a new format, new station, and that was exciting, and I wanted a change. But they only stayed on air for no more than, what, 2 years
at
the most?
Then it flipped back. Yep, sure did.
So you did right. So how was it going to K97 from Hot?
Man, it was life-changing. Yes, night and day. Like, man, just everything was just night and day. You know what I'm saying?
They were more corporate.
Way more corporate, way more professional, definitely organized, and, you know, just being around Devin. Devin is one of the most innovative people I've ever met in my entire life. Mm-hmm. Like, Devin is so smart. Mm-hmm. If people just don't understand how smart dude is, man. When it comes to radio, I don't think there's ever been a better radio mind.
Yeah. And Devin still is.
Yeah, definitely. And that's still why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah. So, indie radio, how did you come up with that concept? And I mean, your following is huge. I know you've developed so many relationships from Indie Day Radio.
Man, let me tell you.
And have broken careers.
Let me tell you about how that got started.
Tell me.
Indie Day Radio was basically, at a certain point, Clear Channel said that there had to be 2 hours of local programming a week. So I was basically doing something that nobody else wanted to do. It was kind of like the crumbs from the table. Mm-hmm. Nobody else wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to really deal with local rappers or local, you know what I'm saying? That just wasn't appealing. But me, I'm just, you know, I just know what's out there in the streets. You know what I'm saying? So I just took it. I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So, like, once again, just making something from nothing. And, you know, with me being so connected to the streets, that was always the first thing that I did. Every time I go to a city, I go get in the streets. I go to the hoods. I go get up whatever street niggas got going. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm always connected. I've never been scared. You know what I'm saying? Even Memphis's heyday, I'm in the places ain't no DJs at. Let me tell you something. Ain't no radio personalities. If y'all knew how I know
these. Where are these places?
Oh, if y'all know how I know these rappers, I've seen things that you just can't. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I've really seen.
Like
people who are doing what they say they do, I've seen them actually doing it. Let's just say that much. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I know these people a little bit more intimately when it comes to the inner workings of the streets. So with my radio knowledge and my street knowledge and my relationships, you know, I just kind of put everything together. You know what I'm saying? And I just would always look for whatever was hot in the club, whatever was hot in the streets, whatever was hot in Mississippi, Arkansas, anything in any surrounding area.
So you Dallas, to that tri-state area.
Yeah, the whole
Arkansas,
entire
Mississippi. I noticed you were one of the ones tapping into the other states here. Because we border
because
all of those states.
Nobody else would do it.
Yeah.
People in Arkansas had never seen a K97 DJ. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I could go over there and get a different type of money. So that's why while they were out here fighting to make $250, $300 from a club, mm-hmm. I was going and getting the door. You know what I'm saying? Half the door at some spots in man, what part of Arkansas was we in? We was in Blytheville, Jonesboro. Mm-hmm.
That sound about right.
Lepanto.
Shout out to Arkansas.
Man, West Memphis, Forest City.
That's
you
it?
Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I was everywhere. So that was just one of the ways I created my network. And there would always be somebody hot in these little areas. So I would just make sure they had clean music. If they had real energy, I was on it. You know
and
what I'm saying?
And in Mississippi as
Mississippi,
well.
Mississippi, Arkansas, of course. I always kept a connection to Houston, Dallas. So if it was anything that was hot around the area or if it was something that kind of would be good in Memphis, if I felt like it could translate to Memphis, I was on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when I broke a lot of artists. I mean, man,
yeah, tell me about some of those artists. Tell me your top three artists that come to mind when, you know, you kind of changed the trajectory of the local music here in Memphis.
Dolph, definitely.
Dolph. Let's
Dolph
talk
is,
about Dolph.
Yeah,
how
Dolph,
was your relationship with Dolph?
Man, my relationship with Dolph was starting off, I was probably, DJ-wise, I had to probably be one of his biggest allies. I would say mm-hmm. when he was first coming out, I would say it would probably be me and Lil Larry. Because Lil Larry is the person that actually introduced me to Dolph. Mm-hmm. And you know, once me and Dolph got to working and I was just able to see his movement, you know what I'm saying? Like, Dolph would be at the barber shop. So I remember Dolph first starting out passing out his mixtapes. He had on, like the polo boots and the Gucci sweatshirt. I forget, mm-hmm. He had a bunch of Gucci shit on. And I remember seeing the CD everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then I just started watching how he elevated. Then I would start seeing him have mixtapes hosted by big Atlanta DJs. I would hear I heard it, one of his records at Hot 107. It was a record that he had with the Drummer Boy produced called Flavors. And I just said, I called Larry and I'm like, man, Larry, who is this Dolph dude? Man, what's up with him, man? I really want to know what he got going on. It seemed like he got real emotion. So me and Dolph met each other, man. We got to working. And, you know, I'm kind of the person, I'm not saying I discovered anybody, but I'm the person that brings what's going on in the streets to the ear of the DJs, to the radio station. I introduce him to Devin. I introduce him to Mike. I introduce him to you know, that part of what was going on. So he was able to forge his own relationships, and he wound up buying a booth at the car show, the Dub Car Show. He sponsored the K97 booth. And from that point forward, once he did that, man, him and Devin got to be so cool, and that kind of created the relationship with him. But I would definitely say Dolph. Man, it's just so many artists. It ain't really too much that Dolph would definitely be the person that would stand out. You know, Boogie, Bag,
okay,
Juicy Fruit. Juicy Fruit is another big standout. Juicy Fruit, hot. Yeah, definitely.
I need the world to know that.
I was rocking with Juicy Fruit when nobody was rocking with Juicy Fruit. Yeah. Lil Migo, man, it was just so many.
Now,
I mean,
the names you just mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely had my hand in a lot of situations, and definitely helped a lot of these people network and get to a higher level. Like, people would always come out to a better situation after dealing with me. I can't say I took anybody to the top, but definitely I made some great
introductions.
Yeah, but
people like you are needed because you gotta know somebody to get on, to get your music on. Like, I'm sure Dolph probably, you know, had the ear of the streets. He was out in the streets slanging his CDs. Somebody had to make the connect for Dolph.
Yeah, somebody
had. That's how
it
works.
You gotta have glue people, man. Like, people like me are so necessary, just even to the entire ecosystem of what we've been able to create in Memphis. You know what I'm saying? You have to have somebody like me that's at the top of the food chain to bring it to the other guys. You know, big shouts out to DJ Q. Shouts out to DJ Coop out there in Nashville. You know, these are some DJs I've been able to have some type of influence with. DJ D Nice. You know what I'm saying? These are people that I saw at early stages that I would just put my hands around, and you know, I always saw something. So my thing was always to give game to the youngsters, because I seen how the other DJs and other people wouldn't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I just remember being on that other side of it. So just when it comes to dealing with the artists, you know, a lot of people don't really see the finished product. You know, I'm able to look at it in its embryonic stages and it can tell you, like, hey, dude gonna blow. This record right here, it's gonna go. Hey, I'm telling y'all, such and such.
Okay.
I just made so many connections with so many people.
Yeah.
I just didn't get the money. You know what I'm saying? Like, I did a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, it opened up so many doors, and it just kind of put me in a position to make a natural transition to being a facilitator. I don't know what I am now. I've been a manager, a consultant.
Yeah.
I'm some of everything. I'm whatever the moment is calling for, that's what I'm going to be.
Okay. But that comes with a price as well.
Yeah,
right?
It comes with price. Yeah,
okay,
definitely.
Because you have learned your lessons along the way.
And then paperwork, too. That's the one thing. That's the one thing. Paperwork.
Oh,
you
got to
have
that.
Your paperwork together, man. If you don't have your paperwork together, man, let me tell you something. They're going to forget about you. No matter how much you help people, no matter what you do, man, I got you, bro. Whenever hey, man, we gone. So, you know,
that,
a lot of that stuff, you know, just didn't come to fruition. But, you know, I've created some great moments with some great artists. Shouts out to 2Deep. 2Deep was one of the one of my most prolific artists that I've ever dealt with. Me and 2Deep were attached at the hip. 2Deep was big when it came to the player pimp rap. You know, that was kind of his lane, and you know, I really wanted to turn him into a Jay-Z-ish, T.I.-ish type of vibe, you know what I'm saying? And we got blessings from a lot of the culture. You know, he just never got as big as we wanted him to be, but even at this point in time, he's still very relevant. You know what I'm saying? We created a lot of things that artists use now because of my situation with 2Deep. we were the first ones to kind of move into that digital space of dealing with World Star.
Yeah.
You know, doing different things like different platforms like Dirty Glove Bastard, which is the vehicle behind Off the Porch, which mm-hmm. is one of the biggest platforms in hip hop. We were big. We were doing the blogs and stuff back in like 2010, 2011, 2012, mm-hmm. 2013.
That's when everything popped
off. We were going to the South by Southwest,
yeah.
going to A3C when it was first coming up. So, you know, my whole thing would just be to just move around. You know what I'm saying? So I would plant seeds in Atlanta. I would plant seeds in all the surrounding cities around Memphis, plant seeds back in Houston, plant seeds in Dallas. Like, mm-hmm. that's just my thing. Like, I'm just going to be moving. Even if I don't know what I'm doing, I'm just going to be doing something.
Okay.
So, you know, that was, that's still my guy. We still locked in right now. But
you're the connector.
Yeah. I'm the connector. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I think my position is very necessary.
It is definitely such an intricate piece to the culture. Now, you know, you mentioned your relationship with Young Dolph. You also had a relationship with Yo Gotti. Yo Gotti's brother, Big Juke, was recently killed here in Memphis. And you had a relationship with Juke big time, right?
Yep, definitely, man. I definitely rock with Juke. For a little small moment in time, I was actually A&R'ing for CMG. Mm. That was when Boogie came. It's crazy that me and Juke met Boogie literally the same day Boogie performed at his son's birthday party at Privé. And you could just kind of see that energy that Boogie mm. had, and Juke gravitated to it. And of course, you know, the rest is history. But yeah, man, me and Juke were good. And just, man, that whole situation to this day just such a sad situation with Juke.
For those that don't know how important Juke was to his brother Yo Gotti's career, what did Juke actually do? For those that did not know,
Juke did the leg work. Like, Gotti got too much going on, so Juke was actually going to be out here on the ground. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? He's going to be in these different cities. He's going to be at the club. He's going to be, Juke going to be in the trenches. You know what I'm saying? And that's the one thing about Juke. Juke was a hell of a A&R. You know what I'm saying? Juke was definitely good about finding talent. He was a good dude, especially when it came to you know, all of the things that he did for CMG. There would be no CMG, not to this level, without Juke.
Yeah. Wow. And it still continues. I've been reading different articles about Yo Gotti's empire. Millions.
100 million.
He was in Forbes for 100 million.
100.
So it's still going.
I've watched that situation from when he got his first $60,000 from TVT. Mm-hmm. To that $250,000 with Birdman, to him buying himself out of all these deals, to now him being up $100 million. So, like,
and his empire is diversified outside of music as well.
Man, like, Gotti is always, people don't understand.
He's done a great job for himself.
Gotti is always genius level smart. Like, man, Gotti be out here talking all that street shit, doing all this shit. You know what I'm saying? But people didn't understand. Gotti not smoking. He not drinking.
He doesn't do any of that.
Man got a clear head.
Yeah.
Man, he's methodical. You know what I'm saying? Like, always 10 steps ahead. And that's why when Gotti got with Jay-Z, I kind of knew where it was going. Because mm-hmm. they kind of, in some way, shape, form, or fashion, kind of in the same headspace.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
True.
So I think that was a great move for Gotti when he went over there to Roc Nation.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things is we've talked about Young Dolph. We've talked about Yo Gotti. Young Dolph was heavy in the streets. He felt like he could go, you know, to his neighborhood. We never see Yo Gotti in the streets here in Memphis. Like, you will not know Yo Gotti is in town, and I'm sure that's by design.
Yeah, I mean now, but I mean, it was definitely a time when Gotti was definitely in the streets. Even when he was getting real money, he was mm-hmm. still, you know, around, still pull up in Ridgecrest, still mm-hmm. pull up in North Memphis. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you just got to know how to move, man. And just that situation with Dolph, it just did so much to me just to see all that, man, just the potential that he had and
yeah.
where he was going. And, you know, just everything, man. It's just tragic to see all of this violence and shit that happens when people are up 8-9 figures. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's one thing when it's happening and ain't nobody got no money. But, man, for it to happen and everybody's rich, y'all not getting in. Nobody's getting in nobody's way. True. So why are we having all of this, you know, this conflict? But, you know.
Yeah. Well, even when you were here, the crime in Memphis was extremely high. We're still there, 007. And I know you're in Houston now, but you probably hear about our crime rate all the time.
Man, it sounds so bad. If I didn't know what was going on in Memphis, I'd be scared to be
here. That's the perception of Memphis. Like,
people don't understand, but I try to tell them, man, it's really how you move. You know, if you know how to move, you're going to be all right. You know what I'm saying? You just can't be in the gray areas. You know what I'm saying? You got to be where you need to be. Mm-hmm. If you're not there, hey, you're moving at your own risk. But, man, I love Memphis. You know what I'm saying? And I'm always going to support Memphis. I'm always going to be pro-Memphis. Of course, I needed to get up because my family's in Houston. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's more opportunity for me to do what I need to do to grow my business. It's just so much stuff that's going on in Houston. There's so much stuff that's missing in Houston. And I think moving to Memphis kind of took me a little bit further ahead than most people in Houston, because the difference between Houston and Memphis is, in Memphis, music is a business. In Houston, music just feels more like a hobby. Mm. It's like you got some serious artists out there, but you got a lot of them. They're not really knowing what it takes to get over the top. And with me watching so many successful situations out here in Memphis, I've got an idea as to what it takes. You know what I'm saying? I've been attached to real success out here. And, you know, going out to Houston, I'm just trying to kind of spread that same vibe and trying to see what I can create. But the one thing I will say is I'm really trying to diversify my ear now. I'm really trying to put myself in different situations. So one of the things that other than hip hop. So one of the people that I'm working with right now is a Memphis artist that's actually growing at an exponential rate. And his name is Anthony Q.
Yes, I know Anthony Q.
Soul singer.
R&B. Okay,
R&B, soul, whatever you want to call it.
R&B, soul singer. Man. Now, he got that voice. I saw him at a festival. He was singing some R. Kelly. I said, who is this young man?
Them numbers are so crazy. Them streaming numbers is going through the roof.
Good voice.
So I've been working with him really over the last 2 to 3 years. And he was kind of moving more into like a rapper. From what I could see at that time, he was moving more into a hip hop space. And one day I just was telling him, like, man, like,
don't do that.
I just think you need to be more on the soul music side, because your voice is so unique. Even though it's not the most popular thing to do right now, I just feel like you'll stand out in that space. And I think he was already thinking that. I just kind of confirmed it for him. And once he did it, man, it's just been crazy. I mean, man, the numbers that he's doing right now, I can tell you right now, he's definitely going to be a success story. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I agree.
I'm really attaching myself to that situation and just, you know, dealing more so with producers and just trying to find different ways to diversify and, you know, get to that real bag. That's what I'm trying to do.
And really, your career in media has come full circle. You started in Houston, came to Memphis, I think parted ways with iHeart around 2019, 2020.
Yeah, 2020, like the end of 2020. Going into 2021.
Right, and that's around COVID time.
Yeah, that's
when COVID jumped off.
Yep.
You moved back home. How was it transitioning back home to Houston after being gone for so long?
Crazy. Man, let me tell you something.
I can imagine.
That had to be the hardest thing in life to do, because you're having to pack up, take your family. It's in the middle of COVID. And then, you know, the way that I'm accustomed to get money and the way I'm accustomed to moving, you know, I know things is going on in Houston. And I'm thinking when I get there, these people going to look out for me. This person going. Houston taught me a cold, hard reality, man. I had to learn real fast. So it took a little while. You know what I'm saying? I had to go in there and recondition my mind. But I'll say now that the opportunities in Houston are much bigger, you know what I'm saying? And I bring such a unique space to Houston, and I see my lane now. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? So one of the things I've been doing, I bring a lot of stuff into Houston. You know what I'm saying? If I can find the right artist to connect with mm-hmm. in Houston, I'd like to do so. But I do better bringing things into Houston. So I bring a lot of Memphis stuff into Houston.
Mm-hmm. And do they love Memphis music?
They love
Houston.
Memphis music, man. They love
it. Yeah, they love Memphis music everywhere now.
I tapped in different. I've actually made quite a few Memphis to Houston connections mm-hmm. and Houston to Memphis. Like I actually, with Meg Thee Stallion, I was intricate in her development. My friend T. Ferris was actually signed her to a 1501 mm-hmm. and
she talks about
I was one
the
of the first people to actually break her record, because me and T. Ferris had been dealing with each other for 20 years prior, you know, because T. Ferris used to be with Swisher House and Michael mm-hmm. Watts. So I would go down to Houston and, you know, him and Carl, we'd be sitting up talking, and of course, you know, they picking my brain, I'm mm-hmm. picking their brain, and I got to just tell them about Memphis producers and the production aspect of it. Introduced them to Tay Keith, introduced them to Juicy J. Mm-hmm. I'm the one that actually made the phone call, because nobody could get Juicy on the phone.
Yeah, because
so
Meg and Juicy.
I had to call Pat.
Got songs.
Pat,
okay.
I had to call Ray, which is their cousin. Ray talked to Pat. Pat talked to Juice. And before you know it, they got connected. And what's crazy, I've never met Meg. I've never seen her up close in person mm-hmm. ever. You know what I'm saying? But
connections are made.
Me and Ferris had a good relationship, so I brought that to the table. I also brought Moneybagg Yo to the table. So, you know, her and Moneybagg Yo had that relationship. So mm-hmm. maybe in some way, shape, form, or fashion, I've
a degree Cupid of separation. Around here too.
man, just a lot of things, man. A lot of, you know, B King.
See, everybody wants that Memphis sound.
Yeah, everybody wants that.
But what is the Houston sound? Do they have
the Houston sound? Is a laid back, chill vibe. You know what I'm saying? Like Houston, the thing about Houston, Houston is a very comfortable city. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? So Houston's whole thing is just kind of laid back. You know, Houston's thing is more melodic. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Big Mo. You know what I'm saying?
And they heavily promoted like Scissor, right?
Yeah, so, you know, we promoting, like, you know, slow down.
I'm
we just, you know,
back on that Scissor.
Yeah, you know, but we move at our own pace. But it's more of a Houston makes more riding music, because we in right. our cars for long periods of time, because we got so much stuff that we got to do. You got the city's
Come
so
on,
big,
Houston.
So you in your car a whole lot. So the music is just different. You know what I'm saying? But you know, big shouts out to Houston. Houston is definitely a innovative city, and the music industry is growing. So those types of situations are definitely coming. This next generation of Houston is moving a little bit more aggressively.
Okay, let's go. We love to see it. That big Memphis to Houston connect.
Yep.
And we're going to jump into a little trending news real quick with Esco's Pop Talk right now, DJ 007, because, hey, you know, we live in a world where pop culture rules and we're all tuned in. I want to start off with the news that broke about model, Basketball Wives star Drea.
Yeah.
It's confirmed now that she is definitely pregnant by 22-year-old Jalen Green with the Houston Rockets. And she's about 39.
39.
I would say that's a huge age gap.
Man, let me tell you something.
Did you see this coming? What's going on? Hey, what's going on? You in Houston?
She took advantage of
an opportunity. You been seeing Drea in Houston?
Hey, look, I've been seeing that at them Rockets games. Look, let me tell you something.
Okay.
She took advantage of an opportunity. I mean, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, man, you got to understand the type of money these young guys making. Dude getting ready to sign a 5-year, $240 million deal.
Wow, he must be really good.
Yeah, he was number two pick. So that he's getting ready to sign that second contract. And that second contract, if he does all of the things that's needed to do, it's right around $240-$250 million. So Drea is securing the bag.
That's what she's doing, securing the bag.
Securing the bag.
Yeah, but you know, she may be 39 or so, but she does not look it. Like,
man,
her and Jalen, they make a cute little couple now.
They definitely. I mean, I don't understand how these young guys get caught up like that, but at the end of the day, you know, she know them tricks.
She know them
tricks. You know what I'm saying? Like, so at the end of the day, she put something on him that he couldn't shake off.
Okay, so Drea put something on Jalen. Also in Esco's Pop Talk, Joe Budden podcast. Do you listen to Joe Budden podcast?
Yep.
Okay, so you know Joe is definitely going to stay tuned in with the culture. And something he said recently is about ladies in the rap game. He says that, he basically said that female rappers are over with. He says that a lot of them have been plants in the industry. You know, we seen Nicki Minaj just put out an album. We've seen him interview Nicki Minaj. I think he has a relationship with Nicki, but, you know, his commentary on a lot of the women's music has not been good. What do you think? What are your thoughts on the female rap game right now? Do you like it? Do you think it's going away? Do you think it's good?
I think it's getting ready to transition. Like I said, man, I try to disconnect my personal views from what I do musically as a DJ. I don't have to like a record to support a record. So mm-hmm. I think what's happened is that every year it's just gotten, you've got some good female rappers and then you've got some that kind of push the line. And I think the Sexy Red situation is kind of like the death blow. Mm. I think we like her music and of course it is, you know, it does what it does. But I think she set the bar so low, you know what I'm saying? That now it's just going to be a lot of those types. And you got to think they're not going to be as talented as her. So now she's going to have all of these underlings. They're going to be trying to do the same thing that she does. And I don't mind a woman being erotic or doing certain things. But man, when you're out here selling chlamydia lipstick and gonorrhea lipstick and all of these crazy things and just the stuff that she just promotes, and I just think the people who are participating and making it look so cool, like, man, you know, Cardi B is erotic, Meg is erotic, you know what I'm saying, like, everybody's got, but sometimes, man, people are just going crazy with the stuff that they're saying, and you got all these young girls looking at it right now. So I just think what's getting ready to happen right now, females are going to have to rap again. I think just this particular type of female rap might be in decline, but I think females who are really talented, who can really rap again, I think it's time for Lauryn Hill. It's time for Missy. It's time for something innovative now. Yeah, we've already seen the bottom feeders. We've already seen all of this stuff. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, of course, I love Glow. I love all the girls out of Memphis right now. Shouts out to AR Mermaid. Shouts out to Kate Carvin. Aliza,
a lot of girls
Sly
out of Memphis
Maroney.
Right now.
You know, these girls in Memphis, they holding it down. You know, they ratchet and they do they thing too. But they not just, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just think, and I don't want to sound like the old dude, but I just, this Sexy Red is just, it's challenging. You know what I'm saying? But hey, she getting to the bag. So hey, if that's what it takes to do what you got to do to feed your family, I'm not a big fan of it, but I understand it. You know what I'm saying?
Sexy Red actually connected with a Drake. Drake pulled her up by the bootstraps. Why is that?
Drake just does some things that make me scratch my head. But Drake is always a few steps ahead when it comes to the culture.
He
so
is.
Drake getting so much money, I'm not the person to question Drake. So Drake is saying Sexy Red is what's popping, obviously, then that's what's got to be popping.
You gonna play that record, huh?
I'm gonna play it.
You gonna play that record.
I'm gonna tell you all this shit, and guess what? I'm gonna do a whole Sexy Red set. I'm gonna play 7 Sexy Red songs back to back to back to back if I gotta play them. So,
gotcha.
Hey. That's it.
Wow. Will we be seeing DJ 007 back on the radio?
Man, I'm not going to lie. I'd like to, but it's just, it's so political. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I don't feel like going through all of the jumping through hoops to try to get on radio. I was on radio for 29 years. If I got to convince you to put me on the radio, then I'm not going to do all that. So I don't know. I'm just really looking at my stage in life right now. You know, I'm older now, so I really, you know, I wouldn't mind being on adult contemporary. I'm almost to that point.
I mean,
put me in V101, put me in 102. I'm cool. Let me DJ. Let me mix. I done broke all the records.
That
I
would be
all
cool
that.
To have a good
but, I mean,
mixer.
Yeah. I mean, you know. Hey man, Sue, holla at your boy, man. You know,
Big Sue,
holla at your boy. Come on, man. Put me in. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
But yeah, I'd like to, but it's not really something that I'm just pressing right now. I mean, mm-hmm. I just look at it like, man, I'm gonna go wherever God takes me. I want to get some money now. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know what? Popular, you definitely have a voice. What about podcasting?
That's what I want to do. I just want to I want to do it, but I want to do it the right way. And I think mm-hmm. moving to Houston, I just had to kind of connect with the right people. And I'm just now starting to find those people that make sense. And I'm also doing something big with up and coming R&B artists too. I've got a platform called Flavors that me and one of my partners in Houston we're doing, and it's going to showcase up and coming R&B artists from all around. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I want to give R&B artists a platform like how rappers have, where they can do their one mic drops, they can promote their projects, interviews, mm-hmm. all of that different stuff. I want to be able to cater to R&B artists, because R&B artists don't really have a consistent space that mm-hmm. they could grow in. So that's something that I'm working on right now. So that and just getting more knowledge on the publishing side mm-hmm. and really just trying to get to the money. I mean, I've figured out how to get popular. I've been popular since I can remember. Now I got to get to the point where I can get this money. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm all about. Financial literacy, getting to some money and diversifying.
Well, 007, we definitely appreciate you here in Memphis. All the contributions that you've had. You have a legacy here in Memphis, and you're always welcome back here.
I just want people to remember me, man. I just want to make sure, you know, like, I just want to make absolutely sure, you know, because sometimes, man, after you're gone for a couple of years, man, you know, the stories get rewritten. People, you know, kind of forget the people who actually put things together.
I feel you.
And I just want to make absolutely sure that people, you know, remember my contribution.
They do.
Because I feel like I've done so much for this city. You know, even though I'm not from here, I still feel like I'm from Memphis. You know
you
what I'm saying? Like,
if you spent that long in Memphis, they say you're from Memphis.
Because everybody in Houston always refer to me. They always introduce me. And this is my homie from Memphis. Like, I'm like, okay.
Remember the young man I introduced you to before we got started? He was like, you were on K97. He remembers.
Yeah. So, you know, man, y'all just,
you put your stamp down here in and I wish you the best of luck in Houston, if that's where you're going to stay. Yeah. But continue to connect all of these dots for everybody.
Yeah, I'm consulting y'all. So y'all want to holler at me? You got your shit together. You got your money together.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the person that you
want to.
You want to make things happen, man. I'm the person you need to holler at, because I really know people.
He really does.
Everything I say I do, I really do, and I've got the results to prove it. So.
Now, how can everyone continue to follow your journey? How can they connect with you?
At DJ007, The Great, THEGREAT, on all social media platforms. Make sure y'all holler at me, hit me in a DM, come in under a picture. I'm up 24/7. If it's about that money, if it's about that bag, man, we gonna get to you ASAP. If y'all out here looking for interns to help you out for free, and y'all looking for some, I'm not him. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, because he about the bag.
It's them, not him. You know what I'm saying?
It's them, not him.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, DJ 007. Right, I enjoyed reconnecting with you, catching up.
Yes, glad to see you. And I love what you're doing with this Verbally Effective platform.
I appreciate it. I'm glad you're here as a guest. And, you know, if you need anything from me, let me know.
I will.
You know I'm a holler at Sue, right?
All right, holler till Sue. She's supposed to be hollering at me.
Well, thank you all for tuning in yet again to the Verbally Effective Podcast. Make sure you hit that subscribe and follow on all social media platforms at Verbally Effective and at Ina Esco, at DJ 007 The Great. Follow my boy right here. And until next time, you guys, continue to be verbally effective. Thank you.